Oath of Allegiance of Honorable Members. The Honorable Fabian Raymond Sequoyah. I, Fabian Raymond Sequoyah, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. Honorable Joseph John Garcia. I, Joseph John Garcia, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty of Queen Elizabeth II, and all the successors according to law. So help me God. Honorable John Emmanuel Cortez. I, John Emmanuel Cortez, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. Honorable Gilbert John DeBruy. I, Gilbert Horace DeBruy, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. The Honorable Albert Joseph Kiesler. I, Albert Joseph Kiesler, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. The Honorable Lee Francis Gosta. I, Lee Francis Gosta, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
Honourable Samantha Jane Sacramento.
I, Samantha Jane Sacramento, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true to the Majesty of Queen Elizabeth, the Second, her heir and successor, and will live to the kingdom.
Honourable Stephen Ernest Morris.
I, Stephen Ernest Morris, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth the Second, the heir and successor, according to law. So help me God.
Honourable Paul John Bazan.
I, Paul John Bazan, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth the Second, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
The Honourable Joseph John Bassani.
I, Joseph John Bassani, do solemnly affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty and the Elizabeth of the Second, her heir and successor, according to law.
Honourable Daniel Anthony Peter.
I, Daniel Anthony Peter, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth the Second, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God.
Honourable Marlene Gina Esther Van Maan.
I, Marlene Gina Esther Van Maan, do affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth the Second, her heir and successor, according to law.
Honourable Ellis John Phillips.
I, Alex John Phillips, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and heir and successors according to law. So help me God. Honourable Edwin Joseph Davis.
I, Edwin Joseph Davis, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Queen and Elizabeth II, my heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
Honourable Roy Mark Clinton. I, Roy Mark Clinton, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to my Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. Honourable Brother Nicholas Allen. I, Frederick Nicholas Allen, swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God. Honourable Lawrence Francis Gammon.
I, Lawrence Francis Gammon, speak for us that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God.
Motion on the appointment of the Speaker of the Parliament, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Presiding Member, I have the honour to move the motion standing in my name, which reads as follows, that Mr. Adolfo Canepa, GMA OD, be appointed as Speaker of the Parliament.
Mr. Presiding Member, you take the chair today as Father of the House in a short debate on a motion to reappoint a man who was first elected in the same year as you to the House of Assembly, the predecessor of this Parliament. And as sweet serendipity would have it, that was in 1972, the year in which I was born. Now, 43 years later, you remain in this House and will in turn now deal with the question of whether Adolfo Canepa, affectionately known to most of us as Adolfo, should remain here also in the role of Speaker. Certainly for us on this side of the House, there is no question that the answer should be a resounding yes. That is, of course, where we have proposed this reappointment. And that is despite the many occasions in the past 4 years in which Mr. Canepa may have found against us the rulings he has made. He has in fact been careful to repeatedly absorb us all to aspire to higher standards in debate than the simple and lazy insult or name-calling. Mr. Canada has lived up to his reputation and to his stature as one of our community's respected elder statesmen. I do not propose to repeat everything I said about him at the time of his original appointment in October of 2012, as this is a reappointment. But it is worth delving some extent into the trajectory of Adolfo Ganata when considering this motion. Honourable members will recall that he was one of the teachers turned politicians of the early 1970s. He was the only one of the ministers in the four successive OACR governments of Professor Hassan from 1972 to 1988 who was full-time as a minister and was, I believe, the first ever of the full-time ministers in Gibraltar. That was something which your own government from 1988 onwards would go on to establish as the norm. He culminated his career in government at the very top as chief minister. That he was a gentleman of politics is well known to all, of course. Despite his long time in the arena, he was and is friendly with all of his adversaries. And on this occasion of the consideration of this motion for his reappointment as Speaker of the Parliament, we have the benefit of having available to us also his autobiography, which he has recently published. This sets out his personal, professional, and political life in greater detail than I am able to do justice to in this short address. Secondly, Adolfo consistently reminds us, as readers of his book, as he tells us of those lucky enough to work with him, that his better half, or his better three quarters, as he sometimes refers to her, is his wife, Julie. I want to thank Julie also for the sacrifices they have already made in the past 3 years since his original appointment to the role of Speaker and Vice. I know that at the time in their lives when they should be enjoying their grandchildren, they have once again stepped up to serve Gibraltar. On occasions, that service has meant that Gibraltar has not been able or available to assist Julie even at times of important medical conditions. That concept of service above self is one we would all do well to emulate. And it was not just Adolfo's service, but Julie's service also. Mr. Presiding Member, you yourself spent 20 years on opposite sides of this house to Adolfo Canada. In fact, in 1987 to 1988, you were leader of the opposition and he was chief minister. And from 1988 to 1992, you were chief minister and he was leader of the opposition. And yet, you are two men who clearly have always enjoyed a deep respect and affection for each other. That is as it should be between parliamentary adversaries who should never have any reason to regard themselves as enemies, but we are all in effect on the same side, to voters. So I very pleased at the time when we first moved the appointment of Adolfo Ganata to be Speaker of the Parliament, to hear the Honourable Sir Peter Kahwanisi to tell us why he felt he was an excellent candidate for the job. In fact, I want to quote Sir Peter's statement in Hansard in support of Mr. Ganata when he said this in October 2012. Adolfo, therefore, intrinsically understands both the needs that the government side has for its work to be successfully done in this House, but he also, I suspect, has an intrinsic understanding of the needs that the opposition side of the House has. It is no less important task of holding the government to account. I have no doubt that Adolfo Ganata, when those political qualifications are added to his personal qualities, will be more than able to ensure that the way that he presides over this House will reflect that Parliament is not the government, that Parliament is a different and separate institution from the government, and that within this Parliament, the government is not entitled to particular special treatment. And didn't he take those words to heart, Mr. Speaker? Even though, of course, the Speaker has to ensure the government can do its business effectively in steering its legislative programme through the House, but that the Parliament is a different and separate institution in which both sides are entitled to the same equality and even handling of the treatment, because what this House is a chamber of members of Parliament. And that is exactly, Mr. Presiding Member, what I've also kind of went on to do. But perhaps the biggest accolade that the opposition at the time could have done Adolfo was for us to hear Sir Peter say that he himself had tried to run away Adolfo for the post of Speaker. He had been thwarted only by a family illness which did not enable Adolfo to accept the post then. So people have been right to express such confidence in a man now, once again in the antechamber hearing these words. Indeed, in times when we have descended into acrimony in this race, he has been there to try and calm tempers. He has been there to advise how best to once again return the chamber to its normal collegiate feel. And he has been there to indicate that changes to the standing orders and rules may be necessary, something which we on this side of the House agree should be done by the Select Committee, which we shall have a chance to hear more about later. And it is because we have a deep respect for Mr. Canavan, that we respect his rulings, the times when he has not ruled in our favour as much as the times when he has ruled for us. Because when we ask him to administer the rules of debate in this House, we all ask and expect him to do so in a way that is totally impartial and blind to the identity of the member who is complaining or complained of, and here comes it. So, Mr. Presiding Member, I know that you don't like to hear me say those words. Despite the many findings which Mr. Canavan, may have made against us in the past 3 years since his appointment, and despite the fact that we have disagreed with many such rulings, we have no hesitation in proposing his reappointment as Speaker of this Parliament, because he's a man of political and personal integrity whose motivations are always good and unimpeachable, and I therefore commend the motion and return to the House.
The Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Presiding Member and Father of the House, may I start in this debate by congratulating the Father of the House on his many years of service to this House. It really is a remarkable achievement that you have served for so many years, and certainly on this side of the House, there's no doubt. Everybody in this House, and we wish you to serve in this House for many, many years to come, and for you to be a father of this House for many years to come. Mr. Bonifer has, without a shadow of a doubt, already, as it is, made a significant contribution to public life in his many and varied roles since 1972. He continues to make an equally significant contribution, no doubt, a great personal cost to him and his wife, Julie, in terms of the time that he has spent here and in discharging his other civic duties as mayor and in the Public Service Commission. All of that has to be and is recognized by this side of the House. However, there is no getting around the fact that we have had our differences and that those differences have, in our view, been raised at times. I myself have had serious reservations about the way Mr. Canavan handled part of the budget debate and his subsequent ruling on parliamentary privilege without hearing representations from me beforehand. There have also been clashes with members of the previous opposition, which were at times, in our respectful view, overzealous in terms of the reprimand which our members were subjected to, and in this context, I will remind the House of the Honourable Home Minister's valediction speech at the time of the budget when he repeated his comments in relation to the press. We all recognise that the role of the Speaker is a very difficult one. We all recognise that the role of the Speaker is particularly difficult in the intense, the kind of intense cauldron that is gladiatorial politics and exchanges across the floor of this House and debates and questions and answers. But so too, presiding member, is the role of the opposition, and so too is the role of leader of the opposition. And in our view, on too many occasions, the day after Parliament has been a clash between the Speaker and members of the opposition. Having said all this, and in deference to the high esteem in which the Deputy Speaker should be held, and the comments that I have made about him personally as the office holder and the way that he has loyally served this community over many years in the different roles that he has served, the opposition will today be voting in favour of his appointment. Given his primary function is to preside over this particular House, we think that his position is best served by a unanimous vote of its members. This is a fresh and renewed opposition, and we hope that we can leave the past behind us, and that December 2015 will mark the turning of a page. We also hope that at the end of his tenure in office, that we will be able to view his appointment and our support of it as one of the best collective decisions
that this opposition has taken. Vote in favour. Vote against. Passed unanimously. Oath of Allegiance of the Speaker, the Honourable Adolfo John Senator.
I, Adolfo John Canepa, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law, so help me God. Honourable members, I wish to thank you all most sincerely for the honour and privilege which you have just bestowed upon me in electing me as Speaker of the Gibraltar Parliament. It is also appropriate, I think, at this stage that I should express my gratitude to the Chief Minister for his kind words, and also, indeed, the frankness with which the Leader of the Opposition has spoken. And whilst noting that my election as Speaker of this Parliament may perhaps be described by some as only having received the qualified support of the opposition on this occasion, I want to make it clear that in accepting the honour and privilege, I propose to carry out the duties of this office to the best of my ability without fear or favour. When I was first elected on the 18th of October, 2012, I pointed out that the Speaker has an almost sacred duty to the august institution that is the Parliament, and I pledged myself to uphold its dignity and not to allow it to be brought into disrepute. Today, I wish to solemnly reiterate my commitment to upholding those ideals at all times. That the Speaker is also the servant of the servants of the people. It is my earnest hope that Parliament should be held in high esteem by the electorate, the people whom we are here to serve. Accordingly, I want to appeal to all our honourable members and urge them to try to conduct our affairs in this House with the respect, responsibility, and dignity that befits the mature democracy that we are, and that, lest we forget, took so many years of sacrifice and struggle to achieve. I suggest that honourable members owe it to this community to temper their language whenever debate becomes overheated and concentrate more on the substance, thereby raising the standard and quality of parliamentary experience. Perhaps honourable members should reflect on the fact that the turnout at this last general election was around 10% lower than in the previous three general elections. I think that the electorate is conveying some message to you all. Those honourable members who were here last July during the budget debate may recall that at one stage I said that it had become clear to me during the time that I have been Speaker that the present standing rules and orders of Parliament were inadequate. The Chief Minister has made some reference to this aspect of the rules in his contribution. It is my view that this has affected the conduct of parliamentary business and at times created controversy to a disproportionate level. It has simply raised the political temperature, but contributed very little, if anything, to the reputation of this parliament. I therefore believe that they need to be reviewed and to be reviewed soon. Finally, may I take this opportunity to congratulate all honourable members on their election to Parliament and assure the new members in particular that they will always find me, the clerk, and the staff at their disposal in order to help them in the exercise of their important duties. Thank you.
Oath of office of the Minister with Responsibility for Justice, the Honourable Gilbert Horace Kikuli.
I, Gilbert Horace Kikuli, do swear that in the office of Minister with Responsibility for Justice, I will respectfully acknowledge, defend the independence of the judiciary, and discharge my duty to ensure the provision of resources for the system and effective support of the court.
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, the clerk and I will now proceed downstairs to welcome Her Excellency the Governor.
Speaker, Honourable Members of Parliament, it is both a privilege and a pleasure to formally open this Parliament. I would like to offer my warmest congratulations to all the elected members on their success in this election. Not every governor has the opportunity to experience a general election, during your time in Gibraltar. But I have been very fortunate to experience one in the short time that I have been discharging the functions of this office. I count myself fortunate to have witnessed the campaign, read the election material issued by the party, heard the speeches, studied the commentary, and listened to the arguments about topics which have been the subject of debate. There is no more vivid way to understand what matters to the people of Gibraltar, what their worries are, and what their aspirations are, and to appreciate what options exist for the future. All of those who stood as candidates contributed to that debate. Gibraltar's democracy would be poorer without them, and all candidates deserve our recognition for the courage to put themselves forward and to take part. If debate is the hallmark of a democracy, its health is measured by the proportion of the eligible population who vote without being compelled to do so. By such a measure, Gibraltar must sit comfortably in the gold standard. Although the turnout may have fallen short of some of Gibraltar's historic peaks, it nevertheless gave yet another object lesson to some older and larger democracies. While candidates may contest and voters may select, the legitimacy of the election depends absolutely on its conduct. From the preparation of the electoral list to ensure that those eligible to vote could do so, through the management of the polling station, to the verification and the count. Here too, Gibraltar showed that when excelling becomes a habit, implementation to a higher standard risks being taken for granted. Yet we should not take for granted all those who worked so long and so conscientiously to ensure not only that the result reflected the will of the people, but also that it was seen to do so. I witnessed for myself on polling day the work of so many involved in the process, and I would like to take this opportunity to extend grateful appreciation on behalf of Her Majesty's Government and the people of Gibraltar to the returning officer and all of the civil servants involved, the Royal Gibraltar Police, the local press, and the taxi drivers tasked with the important role of transporting the ballot boxes. It is almost 10 years since the introduction of the new constitution, which, amongst other provisions, secured the modern relationship between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom, whilst not in any way diminishing British sovereignty. In the preamble to the Constitution, Her Majesty's Government reaffirms its long-standing commitment to the people of Gibraltar that the United Kingdom will never enter into arrangements under which the people of Gibraltar would pass under the sovereignty of another state against their wishes. Her Majesty's Government has also confirmed that it would not enter into a process of sovereignty negotiation with which Gibraltar is not content. These statements bear repetition, especially on occasions such as this, since they not only form the cornerstone of the relationship between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom, but also set the context for the work that you do, that I do, and that future governors will do on a daily basis. Gibraltar has emerged from the electoral process, having chosen a programme for government presented to the electorate by the political alliance made up of the Gibraltar Socialist Labour Party and of the Liberal Party. That programme for government sets out specific commitments that will require legislation to be brought to this House. It is envisaged that select committees of this Parliament will be established to deliver aspects of that agenda. In this respect, the newly elected administration is committed to further modernising and reforming the workings of this Parliament. It will do so by continuing the work of the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform. That committee will consider the draft ministerial code, which was submitted previously, as well as a parliamentary code that, when approved, will apply to all members. A select committee will also be established for the purpose of reviewing the 2006 constitution. The Chief Minister will publish a bill for an act to establish the Gibraltar Consultative Council. There is, in fact, a very broad legislative agenda proposed by this government. which will include, after appropriate consultation, legislation to introduce private sector pensions. Legislation to ensure that criminal laws are maintained up to date and to protect the community from serious crime and new threats to our security. And legislation to update criteria for eligibility for legal assistance and the rates payable to practitioners. A bill for the Freedom of Information Act will soon also be published, and a bill to amend the Judicial Services Act, which will be republished for consideration by this House. A command paper will also shortly be published to act as a consultation exercise in respect of amendments which would allow equal marriage. Draft bills of new Town Planning Act and the new Heritage and Antiquities Act have already been the subject of consultation of the publication of command papers during the last Parliament. Both will now be subject of bills to be published shortly. Legislation will also be introduced to ensure that Gibraltar is able to organise a referendum in keeping with the provisions of the bill currently going through Parliament in Westminster in respect of whether the United Kingdom should remain a member of the European Union. The people of Gibraltar will vote as part of the franchise of that referendum, as the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable David Cameron, has committed. Legislation will also continue to be brought to transpose into Gibraltar law EU directives as per Gibraltar's obligations. Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar is committed to giving effect to the relevant protections enshrined in the International Convention on the Rights of the Child and the UN Convention on the Rights of the Disabled. Legislation to achieve implementation of both important international conventions will form part of the legislation to be introduced into this House in the coming year. Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar will continue to work with Her Majesty's Government of the United Kingdom to seek to engage in a constructive dialogue with the Government of the Kingdom of Spain on all matters which might benefit the people who live on both sides of the frontier. Mr. Speaker, as ever, I hope there are many challenges for the Government, for the opposition, for the people of Gibraltar, and for those of us committed to serving the well-being of Gibraltar. From my personal experience, I know that all those in this House will do their utmost to work for the people of Gibraltar. Mr. Speaker, may I wish all members of this House, in government and in opposition, well in tackling the important issues ahead of them, in fulfilling the exacting responsibility placed on them by the people of Gibraltar. I have great pleasure in declaring open this session of Parliament.
The Honourable the Chief Minister.
Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, as best we would have it, it was exactly 4 years ago to the day, and almost to the hour, that I was first sworn in as Chief Minister of Gibraltar at the Convent by Sir Elgin John, together with my ministerial colleagues, in 2011. Today we are sworn in again as Members of Parliament on the 9th of December. And it is a huge honour and privilege to stand for the second successive occasion on behalf of Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar to a gathering's address on the occasion of this third ceremonial opening of our Parliament since it was first filed under the 2006 Constitution. It has been very positive indeed to hear you state the commitment of the United Kingdom on the sovereignty of Gibraltar, of course. As we established at the last ceremonial opening, the speech which Your Excellency has delivered is in the nature of Her Majesty's speech at the first opening of the Parliament at Westminster. It is now an address prepared in close consultation with the Chief Minister of the day in order to ensure that it is a reflection of the legislative agenda of the incoming administration in this Parliament. It is no longer the speech of an administering power telling members of the Legislative Council or the House of Assembly what to do or how they are expected to do it.
And that is a sign of our mature constitutional development and exactly as it should be in a democracy where the parliamentary session which we have officially opened will now be giving effect to the will of the people as determined in a free and fair general election. We have also established in the last 4 years that the correct style of reference for the government elected by the people of Gibraltar under the 2006 constitution is that of Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar. In fact, Her Majesty's permanent executive presence in Gibraltar through her government representation is the physical manifestation of the fact that she is the constitutional head of our government, and in that way also Queen of Gibraltar. Her ministers here assemble, all of us British citizens, are her British government of Gibraltar. A Gibraltar which will continue to strive to show the whole world that we are a nation of men and women of goodwill. A nation ready to be removed from the list of non-self-governing territories of the United Nations and ready to make any changes necessary to achieve that delistion so long as they are compatible with continued and perpetual British sovereignty. In short, above all else, forever a British nation of the British family of nations. I said at the last ceremonial opening that the fact is that nothing we have achieved as a people has been easily won, and therefore the fact that we may have to stand our ground, unmovable as our rock, in the face of nations determined to usurp our rights and recolonize our future, will not dampen Gibraltarian spirits one bit. Well, Your Excellency and all others have seen that the past 4 years since that day have been characterized by an aggressive campaign of just that type of attempted usurpation of our rights and recolonization of our homes. But it has not dampened our spirit. In fact, it has spurred us on to greater things. We embark, as we have said we would, on a campaign to defend our international political rights and our territorial rights in all relevant international fora. We did so in partnership with colleagues from UK representative office around the world. And we did so armed with the best legal advice, and more often than not, I am proud to say, advice from Gibraltarians better qualified than anyone else to provide that legal advice. Bringing Gibraltarian talents together in support of the just cause of the people of Gibraltar. And so it has been that the social, economic, and political development of this small but resilient nation of ours has continued to progress despite the many challenges that have been laid in our way. Because the brutal actions of those who would deny our very existence, who refuse to hear our voice, and who refuse to recognize our inalienable rights, are as nothing compared to the solid resolve of the people of this rock. We are embarked on a collective journey towards decolonization, but not independence, which is only a one-way street. And, as a Gibraltarian composer and lyricist once put it, nothing is going to stop us now. Indeed, our international representation is now wider than ever before. We stretch beyond London in the United Kingdom, to Brussels in Europe, to Washington and New York in the Americas, and to Hong Kong in the Far East. We have much more to do in Morocco, but we are proud of the work we have already done to open doors in trade, in renewable energy and human relations with that great neighbour of ours to the south. We have resolved the human issue of those who are of Moroccan origin in our community and have lived here for over 40 years and have not yet had their nationality application even dealt with. And we now hope to do even more in Casablanca and Marrakesh in coming months. And we expect to be able to do considerable work in the near future with the partners we are already working with in China and Hong Kong. We expect soon to be able to be represented in some of the top cities in India, and we hope to also shortly be able to get off the ground the beginning of our work in Israel. Already, a joint Israel-Gibraltar Chamber of Commerce is about to be launched, something which the government warmly welcomes and will support. It will follow close in the field of the Gibraltar American Chamber of Commerce, or ANCAM, which is going from strength to strength. And so, when we have received people of the diaspora into this widely multicultural society of ours, we are presented now with great opportunities in pursuing the almost local knowledge of those of our fellow Gibraltarians who have strong links still with the emerging nations of their ethnic origin. There are no doubt great challenges in working across cultures, but there are also great rewards in doing so if we can calibrate the relationships we forge into mutually beneficial alliances. That will be the endeavour to which we pledge ourselves going forward. In doing so, of course, the Maltese government of Gibraltar will continue to have an outstretched hand of friendship and cooperation to our northern neighbours also. We will continue to seek to establish non-sovereignty dialogue with Spain on matters of mutual interest and which will improve the lives and people of both sides of the frontier. But such dialogue must be based on the principle of mutual respect, something which we believe is preserved under the bilateral forum for dialogue, which we strongly support. Unless our willingness to dialogue, cooperate, and seek mutual benefits should never be interpreted by anyone, anywhere, as any diminution of the position of all previous, current, and I am sure, all future governments of Gibraltar. That position is simply that, as we have repeatedly said, our people will never succumb to political harassment or economic pressures to abandon our rightful path of political development and our fundamental human rights to determine the red and white future of this precious land and sea of ours. Let me turn now to matters entirely parliamentary. We make history today in this place, for today is the first time that the proceedings of a ceremonial opening are streamed live on Parliament's own website. We were very keen as a government during the lifetime of the last Parliament to move ahead with opening up with the heart of our democracy, and we have done so. And as a result, each month that we meet, people can watch the proceedings in their computers or tablets. The signal is also provided to our national broadcaster. I know that there have been moments of political controversy in the past 4 years when many have tuned in, or browsed in, as one should now say. That is exactly what we should want to see happening. But when issues of political controversy arise, the shareholders in Gibraltar PLC, the people to whom we owe our principal duty, should be able to see what is happening in the boardroom where the issues are being considered. This case. And that has happened in a consistent set of monthly meetings since we were elected, interrupted only for the purposes of essential work being done to improve the case. It is indeed a much improved and modernized trend, but not to everybody's liking, that we now work in, number one, in which we were first sworn in as a government 4 years ago, and into which I rendered almost exactly 12 years ago myself. And we remain committed to that monthly rhythm of meetings, starting in January, which works only for Easter and the month of August. That rhythm provides many more opportunities for questions from opposition members than has ever been the case before in the history of our Parliament. In addition, we will continue the process of publishing online the huge amount of information that we now put in the public domain. This is information which we previously had to ask for, or which was either not provided, or which required a repetition of a question each of the very few times that Parliament met. Now that information is automatically made available online for all citizens to be able to see and access. Your Excellency has in fact already set out the important work which we will continue to do in legislation and select committees in this Parliament. This is a place, Your Excellency, where people will expect those of us appointed to serve to work together in a positive state of cooperation, as we will often be doing in respect of legislation. One committee will be looking in detail at the workings of this House and how we can further modernise and advance the integration of our community in the running of our affairs. Technology will no doubt have a bigger part to play in promoting greater public participation in our democracy in the future. That Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform has important issues before it. Not least should be the review alluded to by Mr. Speaker of the standing orders and rules of this House, which were last reviewed after the 2006 Constitution. But the review was not one of substance, rather one of form. A review of substance is necessary, and should also take into consideration the need for Parliament to attract people from all walks of life to the ranks of its membership. That also means ensuring that we organise our work in a manner compatible with the imperative, for example. Already, we have introduced for the first time in our history the publication of a timetable to enable members and journalists to plan their parliamentary days. Such a move was unprecedented before our election, when we were kept guessing about meeting days. We will continue to publish such a timetable. The Honourable Mr. Basile, who is no longer an elected member and will no doubt be much missed as a friend and parliamentary colleague, also sensibly requested that we should not start sessions at 9 a.m. so that those who are parents of young children could deliver children to school safely before the parliamentary day begins. This is something I was happy to agree to, and would work well and will continue to be the case where possible. Although not wishing to demonstrate the importance of the work of the committee that will reform the workings of the House, perhaps, however, the most important for that committee will be the one established to review the workings of the 2006 Constitution, which is a decade old next year. It is important that constitutions are not left to atrophy. And so, we must ensure that the current constitution is periodically reviewed to determine what, if any, changes can be agreed to be necessary to ensure its continued relevance. This is work to be done in partnership with the United Kingdom. And the legislation we will be bringing will, of course, also be supplemented by a considerable number of laws which will no doubt originate from Brussels. Of course, in this respect, the important work we will do in preparing to legislate for the Brexit referendum will require this House to work quickly to ensure we are ready when the Prime Minister names the vote. I want to acknowledge again the fact that the Voltairians will vote in that referendum on the United Kingdom's continued membership of the European Union as a result of the Prime Minister being true to his word to include us in the franchise. We will not be found wanting in terms of ensuring that the necessary legislation will be in place in good time for the vote. And at the appropriate time, we must work together across the floor of this House to ensure that we do the best planning for the eventualities that Brexit may present. A number of pieces of legislation, when they deal with new areas of law, have been and will continue to be put out to wider consultation by way of command paper before they are published as bills. We introduced the concept of command papers after the last general election in our first term, and we believe that they have been an immensely successful way of ensuring that all in our community have a better opportunity to comment on what our draft bills. All of this work now falls to be done in the Parliament in what I hope will be a collegiate style. We are all elected as members of this Parliament to work together for the good of our nation. It would be wrong for any member to come here with an attitude of seeking only point scoring or to make partisan political capital. And I'm sure I can welcome all new members to this House safe in the knowledge that they will intend to put Gibraltar's interests always above their own partisan interests, such as they may be. Indeed, it is my pleasure to welcome all the new members opposite. It will not be less than anyone, but on this occasion, I believe, for the first time since 1992, all new members are opposite on one side of the House. I see the faces of some old friends, and the faces of some who I do not yet have the pleasure of knowing personally. I shall look forward to our work here being a catalyst for new friendships in the future. Because I have no doubt that now that all the electioneering is over, we shall be able to carve out strong interpersonal relationships both in the chamber and out of it, as we all strive to do our best for this magnificent country of ours. Indeed, I can give them an assurance, Your Excellency, as I did at the ceremonial opening 4 years ago, that on this side of the House, we are not interested in personalizing the debate. We are not interested in insults or innuendo. We are interested only in a contest of ideas which helps the general public better understand the differences between us. Let's leave contest and duty outside the door. And remember that gladiators are best seen in blockbuster movies and not in this place. So this would be a place of great oratory, but not a place to reach for the cheap personal interest. I said 4 years ago that we would always play the ball and never the man or woman. I was true to that throughout the last 4 years. Indeed, I'm proud to say that an opposition member specifically acknowledged that in Hampstead in January of this year. That is how we were able to turn old foes into new friends. That is how we were able to turn old rivals into new colleagues. And that is how we were able to see those who stood against us before stand up for us now. and we will continue with that attitude. But we will, of course, strongly defend ourselves from any personal attacks made against us. We are all human, and I have no doubt I have perhaps reacted too harshly in the past when I have felt personally insulted. I shall leave those who are without sin or purport to be to cast the first stone. And the rest can be assured that I will be the first to always try harder to elevate the debate to the highest standard that Mr. Speaker repeatedly encourages us to achieve. We should all strive to avoid those unnecessary confrontations. And with a little reflection and maturity, we will no doubt be able to do so. Because the big bright election is now over. The attempt to use fear of gas explosions or the fear of financial Armageddon to determine how people might vote is failed. In fact, the election, the process of election, was impeccably conducted, for which all credit of you for shadow goes to the clerk in his guise as returning officer and all those who so ably assisted him throughout. From the moment I advise you to dissolve the last parliament on the 19th of October, to the moment of declaration of the result of the election by the returning officer and the swearing in of the newly elected ministers, the election passed as usual without any incident. It was entirely free and fair and in keeping with what is now established and deeply entrenched democratic tradition. I know that it was a source of pride for all Gibraltarians. The turnout may have been low by Gibraltar standards, but it was still high by European and international standards. For our side of the House, we have the satisfaction that we were able to expose almost 2,000 more people to vote for. We certainly cannot be accused of not having excited people to come out and support us. We did our bit to get the electorate out and voting. Indeed, we have enjoyed collectively on this side of the House almost 101,000 individual votes between us, a record number of votes cast. That compares very favorably indeed to the 33,000 odd votes which members opposite represent in this House. It is in that way the great Gibraltarian electorate have chosen between competing arguments. They have determined, as they are the only ones empowered to do, whose arguments carry greater credibility, who they believe and who they did not believe, which way of doing things they preferred and opted for. And we will nurture and never take for granted the great complement of that support. Because the size of our greater share of the vote will only be a spur to work harder even than in the last 4 years. We will not allow this massive vote of confidence to sway our political egos in any way. Instead, it will make us even more the unpretentious servants of our people and even more determined to serve with humility and compassion. But now, it is time for all of us in this House to turn our political swords into plowshares for the next 4 years. For we are ready now to deliver on the program that people have chosen. Finally, Your Excellency, it is the first time that I have delivered this address as the proud father of two Gibraltarian beautiful children, for them and for our constant and unwavering support. And love, I must thank my remarkable and wonderful wife, the team. My better set of votes to remind them to accept the I don't think I'll ever get that right. I know I'm not the only parent in this House, and all of us, parents or not, will want to ensure that the Gibraltar we leave behind is always better than that which we inherited. That is why we will continue our work of ensuring that we maintain and further build robust financial reserves as we have already started to do. That is why we will continue not to tolerate any waste of taxpayers' money. And we will continue the work we started of reining in the unnecessary expenditure on government companies, agencies, and authorities which we inherited and which we have already been addressing these past 4 years. That is why we are already actioning the collection of arrears of government revenue which had not been actioned for years before our election. And that is why we will also control the unnecessary spike in spending which occurs in the fourth quarter of the year in some parts of the public sector. And we will do all of that without cutting jobs, without cutting services, and without cutting benefits. This is the position I have been setting out in this House in budget after budget, and we will not waver from it. Because that is what will deliver a safer, more prosperous, and stronger Gibraltar. And that is what our work in this place must be designed to deliver. Devoid of political rancor, devoid of partisan acrimony, and devoid of personal ambition. Only then will history judge us favorably. I also commend your excellency opening of this Parliament and trust that our work in this House will begin in earnest in a spirit of true partnership and not president partisanship.
The Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, it is for all of us on this side of the House a great honour to participate in this ceremonial opening of the devoted Parliament. The first time that I have personally done so as Leader of the Opposition, and the third since it formally became a Parliament under the 2006 Constitution. Your Excellency, just as in the United Kingdom, Her Majesty the Queen presides over the opening of the Mother of All Parliament at Westminster, it is with great joy that we see you as Her Majesty's personal representative in Gibraltar, presiding over the opening of our new Parliament here in Gibraltar. It is in our view not only a reflection of the close and, we hope, eternal bonds between Gibraltar and the British monarchy, but also a reflection of the best constitutional traditions of this Parliament, based as they are on our British parliamentary traditions. Mr. Speaker, Your Excellency, and Mr. Speaker, I beg your pardon, my congratulations to you on behalf of this side of the House on your reappointment as Speaker. We genuinely wish you well in what we recognise is a very difficult undertaking. Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, whilst we will hold the government to account, especially on their numerous and highly targeted electoral promises and the funding of those promises, the opposition will support, not undermine the government, where the interests of Gibraltar must come first. Since March 2013, when I had the honour of becoming the Leader of the Opposition, I have been advocating a closer cooperation between both sides of this House on these issues. I renew that call today, and I maintain that not since the Joint 70 Agreement between the then Blair and Aznar government has there been such a need for this House to work together on the challenges posed by the future. It is a matter of great regret for me that despite leading a motion to on in this House within weeks of becoming Leader of the Opposition, which was approved with amendments, calling on the Chief Minister and myself to work together on the various permutations of Brexit, there have been no meetings between us to discuss what are obviously critical issues for this community. If we cannot work together on this issue, it would be a very sad day for our democratic system of government and opposition, and indeed, I feel, by the entire community. Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, if that does not happen, it will not be for want of trying on the part of the opposition. The challenges posed by a potential Brexit will be profound for this community. I must make it clear that this is not about participation in the Brexit referendum itself, important as it is for our voice to be heard in a referendum. I believe that Prime Minister David Cameron will succeed in negotiating a deal with our European partners, which will allow the United Kingdom access, at the very least, to the EU internal market. The issue for Gibraltar is what kind of a deal the United Kingdom obtains and what impact it will have on us here in Gibraltar. Any attempt by the United Kingdom to hold, by the Kingdom of Spain, I beg your pardon, to hold the United Kingdom to ransom over the applicability of that deal or any part of that deal has to be considered and opposed by Gibraltar at an early juncture and cross-party strategies devised to head off any such attempt. Whilst I have every faith in Prime Minister David Cameron's word to the people of Gibraltar, nothing should be left to chance and no stone should be left unturned in our own self-protection. Close cooperation between the government and the opposition on this matter would be a legitimate expectation of those who represent on both sides of this House. Indeed, this is exactly what happened in 1972 when a Gibraltar response was required to the terms in which Gibraltar would join the then European Economic Community. Although this is too fundamental importance to Gibraltar, I renew my long-standing call which is a matter of public record for us to work together. Let us be an example to future generations of politicians of the way political differences can be set aside when it comes to such issues. It will reassure the community that our adversarial system of government and opposition is not so entrenched so as to be incapable of cooperation for the long-term common good of our community. Indeed, I believe it would be desirable in the interest of that common good if we could see our way to agreeing long-term strategies on taking our message, our political message, to Spain, the United Nations, Europe, and the United Kingdom. Never has it been so desirable as it is today. Because never have the combined potential consequences of those challenges been more fundamental to Gibraltar than they are today. And our response to them will endure long after the Honourable Gentleman and I have retired from politics. This Project 2025 will command wider support if it includes and does not exclude the opposition. Sooner or later, Your Excellency, the political tide will turn. It always does. Any project which has at its core aim continuity in areas of fundamental importance to Gibraltar will stand a better chance of achieving the same with the inclusion and the backing of all the political parties represented in this House. There have already been steps taken on the part of the GSD opposition to create the groundwork necessary for there to be greater cooperation on some of these issues. All our members of Parliament, attended the National Day rally at Kingston on the very first occasion that I became leader of the opposition. We had not attended the year before under the leadership of my predecessor. Our policy in respect of the 2006 Constitution, namely that it creates a modern, non-colonial relationship with the United Kingdom, with a maximum level of self-government, sport of independence, continues. But it is important that those outside Gibraltar see us united on such an important day of national celebration. In relation to attendance at the United Nations, I repeat the policy we also instituted within months of my election as leader of the opposition, namely that the leader of the GSD opposition is prepared to attend as part of the Gibraltar delegation, provided he or she is allowed sight of that speech or the speech that is to be delivered on behalf of that delegation. It is exactly on the same terms that I attended the United Nations as part of the Gibraltar delegation as leader of the Labour Party. I must make clear that this is not about anyone on this side of the House vetoing anything the Honourable the Chief Minister has to say at the United Nations or anywhere else. But surely, no one on this side of the House can be expected to sit next to the Honourable Gentleman at the United Nations in support of what he has to say, which he would wish to do, without knowing beforehand what he is about to say in our name also. Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, turning to domestic issues. It is, of course, disappointing to have lost the general election. I take full responsibility for that loss, but which my determination to ensure the GSD's success continues unabated. So, too, my determination to remain vigilant on all issues concerning good and proper governance, and which have caused us so much concern over the last 2 years. I derive great strength from the fact that whilst it is easy in post-mortem situations to look for reasons for defeat, and we must learn from our mistakes, we also did everything that we possibly could over the last 2 years to hold the government to account on issues that we felt were important not only to the present, but also to the future of this community. There has been no scattered on approach by the opposition over the last 3 years, no promises across the board in exchange for votes. Our message has been focused and consistent, and will remain focused and will remain consistent. I remind myself too that the Joshua Hassan, Sir Peter Caruana, and the father of the House, Joe Bofano, all lost elections and came back stronger for them. In 1992, the GSD obtained 20% of the vote at the general election, and 1 4 years later with 54% of the vote. In 1984, the Honourable the Father of the House led his party into opposition with 34% of the vote, and 1 4 years later with 58%. To do that, the DUP must be organized, reconnect to the electorate, and turn itself into a genuine grassroots movement. That will be our principal focus outside this House over the next year. Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, the division between government and opposition are a goal of political democracy itself. They rest on the hallowed principle that government derives a legitimacy on the consent of those governed, which means, amongst other things, that the minority accepts the right of the majority to make decisions, provided there is a reciprocal respect for the minority's right to dissent from those decisions and to promote alternative policies. Over the last 2 years, we have promoted many alternative policies in social housing, public finances, democratic reform, education, and training, amongst others. We will continue doing that over the next 4 years. It is also the duty of every opposition to hold the government to account fearlessly, and that is precisely what we will also continue doing over the next 4 years. It is, however, a regret to me that there have been attempts over the last 4 years to equate the political fortunes of the parties in government with loyalty or disloyalty to Gibraltar. Such a proposition, Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, is an anathema to democracy. It is the easiest thing in the world to agree with the government of the day. It is much more difficult to strike the balance between opposing the government when it is necessary and supporting it where it is justified. It is that balance that we will, above all, seek to strive to achieve over the next 4 years. Your Excellency, Mr. Speaker, there are three projects which, in our view, are vital to this community's continued progress and prosperity, including our environmental well-being. A new power station and a renewal of the distribution network, the tunnel under the runway, and the sewage plant. Without the power station, the overhaul of the distribution network, the resilience and reliability of our electricity supply will be put in serious doubt. Without the tunnel, traffic could flow, cannot be separated from aviation activity and border queues, and we cannot put an end to the chaos they cause to traffic throughout the Gibraltar. In the 21st century, it is simply not acceptable for a modern, progressive, and environmentally conscious community to be pumping raw sewage into the sea. All these major projects will cost well in excess of £150 million. And at the end of June of this year, reserves stood at £28 million. That's the cash the government has in the bank. The government has a manifesto commitment to increase community care reserves from £100 million to £240 million over 4 years. On current projections of government surpluses, that would mean applying most, if not all, government surpluses to community care. The result is that these three major projects, so vital for Gibraltar, will require additional borrowing. They cannot be paid for either out of reserves or through government surpluses. That is not Armageddon, that is fact. Mr. Speaker, as at the end of June, direct net debt stood at £418 million, just £39 million, short of the legal borrowing limit of £457 million. In the premises, the government cannot fund these projects, nor indeed all the other promises in its manifesto, by borrowing directly. During the general election, we told the people of Gibraltar that this community was carrying a debt of approximately £900 million, half of which was off-balance sheet borrowing by the government through government-owned companies and the Gibraltar Savings Bank. That trend of borrowing off-balance sheet will inevitably continue because of the figures that I have just quoted and will continue to be a source of division across the floor of this House. We urge the government once again to come to Parliament and seek parliamentary approval for additional borrowing rather than increased off-balance sheet borrowing. The United Kingdom includes the debt of government-owned companies and the debt of the National Savings and Investment, the equivalent of our Gibraltar Savings Bank, as part of the national debt. That is the trend across modern Western democracies, to increase the transparency in relation to our public debt and to bring public debt onto the books of the government rather than have it hidden away off balance. we commend exactly the same transparency and practice in Gibraltar so that any debate on public spending occurs in the context of a true reflection of our national indebtedness. Although we were far from satisfied with the process employed by the government in arriving at this decision on the consultation for the power station and the use of LNG, we accept that the government now has a mandate to pursue. But we will, of course, continue to scrutinise the construction of a power station and the use of LNG within our jurisdiction. We have a duty to those who voted for us, to those who showed interest and concern on this issue and to the wider community, to ensure that these projects continue to be the subject of very careful democratic and parliamentary scrutiny. We're also glad too, Mr. Speaker, Your Excellency, that both Your Excellency and Mr. Speaker have raised the issue of parliamentary reform, and indeed, that it has been raised by the Honourable the Chief Minister. We, for our part, remain committed to the process of parliamentary reform, but we remain in particular committed to the principle of enlargement of Parliament and the creation of backbenches. And we also remain committed in particular to the principle that the number of meetings of this House does not necessarily increase the quality of our democracy without the requisite sincerity in relation to the answers provided to questions in this House and the quality of the information provided across the floor in this House. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I would like to deal with three issues. First of all, I would like to thank Damon Bettina, my deputy, over the last 2 years, Sylvain Cuerrick and Jaime Nepo for the work they did during the last 4 years. In the case of Jaime Nepo, for the work he did over 19 years as a member of this House and 16 as a government minister. Secondly, I would like to thank Sir Peter for his unflinching support and the invaluable advice over the last 2 years that I have led since the party that he led so successfully over 22 years. Thirdly, I would like to welcome the new members of this House, this side of this House, and in whom the future of the GOB and the opposition rests. I know that you will all work tirelessly and fearlessly, not only for those who voted for you, but for the good of the community. Your public spirit in offering yourselves as candidates, and that those who came forward and were not elected does credit to all within this community. Let us prove to be the opposition that the people of Gibraltar deserve.